When Congress granted the federal government total control over the nation's food, the Obama administration hired former Monsanto Corporation executive Michael Taylor to rule over its new dominion. This new rule leads us to ask, for whom will government make food safe?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 942nd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Sasebo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Aaron.
Yes.
For whom will government make food safe?
I'm not sure if it's for us.
Okay, we'll see. Well, that's a question on the table today. Also, producer Kelly Bayer. Hello, Kelly.
Greetings.
Kelly, for whom will government make food safe?
It should be for us, right?
Should be for us. Okay, fair enough. Well, folks, they say one should never let a serious crisis go to waste. And so, when a number of industrial food contamination sickened and killed many across the land, Congress passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. Now, this act granted absolute dominion over the nation's food to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. To rule over this new dominion, the Obama administration hired former Monsanto Corporation executive Michael Taylor, and the FDA has since been drawing up rules that will enable the agency to control what we eat. These new rules will give FDA the responsibility for implementing measures to prevent contaminations. It will allow for the agency to inspect food producers for compliance. It will force importers to certify compliance. It will allow the agency to recall any food for any reason. And it will allow the agency to coordinate efforts between different government agencies. This new rule of government leads us to ask some questions. They are, why did the Obama administration select a former Monsanto Corporation executive to rule over the nation's food safety? How will his new rule attempt to make food safe? And finally, what kind of farm will be allowed to grow government-safe food? Well, we have a whole bunch of fine people here to help us answer that question. We're going to start with Joanne Baumgartner, who is the CEO, the head cheese of a Wild Farm Alliance. What is the proper title, Joanne?
I'm the director. Thanks,
director.
Michael.
Director works fine. Now, but wait a minute. What on earth, for those out there who have not heard, what is the Wild Farm Alliance?
Well, we promote a healthy, viable agriculture that protects and restores wild nature. So what that means in our area is farmers are putting in hedgerows that support pollinators and beneficial insects, and if they're raising livestock, they're doing it on pasture instead of growing grain that pollutes it, could potentially pollute the environment with too much fertilizers and all of that. Just more natural systems in agriculture.
Do you mean to suggest that farms should have nature on them?
That's right. Nature can help us keep healthy and help farmers farm.
Okay, good. Well, welcome. Also with us, we have Sarah Hackney, who is the what is your title there with National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, Sarah?
Hey there, Michael. My title is grassroots director, so I'm the one who's in charge of getting the word out to people around the country about issues like this.
Good, grassroots. You're Washington, D.C., right?
I am indeed.
Okay, good. Well, in researching this story today, we came across this title for Monsanto that calls itself, the Monsanto Corporation calls itself a sustainable agriculture company. Is the Monsanto Corporation part of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition?
It is most certainly not. Our coalition is we're based almost entirely of nonprofit groups, much like Wild Farm Alliance, like Community Alliance for Family Farmers in California is another one, who work with sustainable and organic growers around the country, trying to help foster more sustainable food systems. So definitely not.
Okay, good. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. Now I'm going to be juggling microphones and whatnot. So if I kind of miss you here, just hold on. I'll come right back to you. Also with us today, we have Ken Kimes with New Natives. Ken, welcome back to the food chain. What on earth is New Natives?
Well, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having us on. New Natives is a small farm here in Santa Cruz County, and what we grow are microgreens and young plants. We used to grow sprouts, but we don't anymore. We grow microgreens and young shoots, mm-hmm. salad greens, basically.
Now, what's the difference between microgreens and sprouts?
That's a big question, Michael. Are you sure you want to go there?
Yeah, give us a brief synopsis.
Well, okay. Real simply, when you eat a sprout, you're eating at least part of the seed, if not the whole seed. And when you're eating a microgreen, you're eating the plant that's been cut away from the seed, like most lettuce and other kinds of vegetables.
Okay. So you kind of sprout seeds in and take out a lawnmower and mow them down? And
yeah, in a sense. Exactly. Right. Well, we leave the seed behind, basically.
Okay. Well, interestingly enough, two of the foods that I treasure most are the microgreens that you grow and the fresh whole raw milk I can get from the farmer's market. And these foods are characterized, they're just full of life, mm-hmm. both of them, full of the precious enzymes that go up to make life. And those are the things I treasure most in the food I eat. And I bring this up because not here today, in this conversation, are those people who represent industrial forms of agriculture. And why are they not here today? Well, I kind of figure that they've had their say with the food safety rules that are under discussion today. They're kind of the ones who actually made those rules. So today we're getting an opportunity to hear the other side of the story. And those are the story from the small farmers, the people who would like to see nature on farms, the farms that want to think of themselves as sustainable, and food is sustainable, the farms who produce foods that have life left in them, what we are looking at is an alternative. So the federal government has laid down the law that there will be no more food contaminations like the one that just occurred with Foster Farms chickens. Mm-hmm. To prevent that, they have formulated a whole new set of rules. Did you hear my five rules, Sarah? Did it sound pretty right there?
I'm not sure that I think I may not have been on the line when those came on, or I may have not heard that piece.
Okay. Well, at any rate, there's five different rules that the federal government is laying down, and they essentially say that we're going to prevent food contaminations by doing the following. And they are, one, they're going to allow, the rules are going to allow the FDA to do what it can to prevent food contaminations. Now, when you hear that, what do you think, Ken?
Oh, I think that's an impossible task, actually. I think that's outside the realm of what is real in the world. It's not that you can't reduce food contaminations, but you can never come to an absolute zero.
Okay. It's going to allow the agency to inspect food producers for compliance. What does that mean, Joanne?
Well, it means that they can show up on anybody's farm at any time for any reason. There doesn't have to be a problem. And if they look hard enough, they might find a problem and put a farmer out of business without any real way for them to respond and get back in. The FDA hasn't defined how they will allow farmers to get back in good graces. That's one of the issues.
So once they've decided you're bad, you're dead, mm-hmm. in the essence. Okay. Another mm-hmm. thing it's going to do, Sarah, is that it's going to allow the agency to coordinate efforts between different government agencies. What does that mean to you?
Well, in theory, what that should mean is that the work that FDA is doing should overlap with work that may be happening at USDA or at Health and Human Services, where there may be overlap in terms of a producer who is maybe regulated under National Organic Program standards and under FDA standards. So in theory, that should be a good thing. But the concern there is that it could instead become duplicative, or that different rules under different agencies could conflict. And then you're going to have an issue where a farmer's not going to know which rules they need to follow under which agency.
Okay, folks, that's the setup. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about food safety rules being promulgated by the FDA. With us, Joanne Baumgartner, Wild Farm Alliance, Sarah Hackney, National State Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, Ken Kimes, New Natives, and you. Why did the government select a Monsanto executive vice president to be the head of the Food and Drug Administration? Right back. We'll do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, the question is, can government make food safe for everybody? And if it does make food safe, then what does that leave for you and I? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking Joanne Gardner, Wild Farm Alliance, Sarah Hackney, National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, Ken Kimes, New Native, or New Natives, just New Natives.
New Natives.
Yes.
That's who we are.
Okay, and also the where I want to go today, I want to ask you a big question, because in considering this program, the question that just pops into my mind is, why did the government hire Michael Taylor to superintend food safety in the United States of America? Little bit about a background here. I just looked it up. You can look it up. Google two things. Google Monsanto Corporation. Google Michael Taylor. Google Monsanto Corporation. This is what you find. It's a very famous company and a very profound company because it's figured out how to stay in business for a long time. It's famous for producing things, for manufacturing things. Among them, DDT, PCBs, Agent Orange, bovine growth hormone, glyphosate herbicides, and now, of course, foods containing genetically modified organisms. That is the Monsanto Corporation. And to run, to superintend the food safety for the United States, the Obama administration hired former Monsanto Executive Vice President Michael Taylor. Now, Mr. Taylor is an attorney who has been working in the industry of food for a long, long time. He first became famous for arguing against the Delaney Clause, which prohibits the Delaney Clause was the one that prohibits the use of chemicals or substances that cause cancer in food. And he suggested that there has to be a reasonable expectation of safety. So you don't have to completely get rid of these things. You just have to be reasonable about it. And that's what his position was there. He argued against requiring bovine growth hormones to be listed as an ingredient in milk. And he convinced the federal government to accept genetically modified organisms in foods as generally recognized as safe, and thus requiring of them no safety efficacy rules. So this is who is running the food safety in our federal government. And so today I just put this question on the table. Why did the Obama administration hire Michael Taylor to rule over the nation's food safety? Joanne, let's start with you.
Well, you know, Monsanto isn't about farming with natural systems. And one of the things that we're really concerned about with this proposed produce rule is that there's going to be huge impacts with the use of manures and compost that help to increase the natural microbiological diversity in soils, which then help reduce pathogens. And without those tools, we're going to have a huge amount of pollution because farmers are going to go to using chemical fertilizers more, their manure is going to pile up, there's going to be a lot more pollution, and it's all because they're not looking at the full spectrum of how agriculture works. The rule is requiring that farmers wait 9 months between applications of manure and harvest and 45 days between applications of compost and harvest, and that's going to go against the National Organic Program rule, so organic farmers are not going to be able to farm the way that they should, and Congress told FDA they should not conflict with the NOP. So it's just another example of how Monsanto is narrowly focused and they're not working in a natural system.
Okay, good. And now we're going to go to Sarah and ask Sarah the same question. Sarah, as the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, why do you think the federal government brought in Monsanto's Michael Taylor to superintend food safety?
You know, Michael, it's actually, when you look at the Food Safety Modernization Act, it's actually pretty clear. And I got a couple of things that may be helpful in thinking about this question. And the first is that, like Joanne said, you know, when it comes to Monsanto and their approach to natural systems, it's terrible. That said, Michael Taylor, when he also spent some time at USDA, and I think a lot of people think the reason he came on board has very little to do with those Monsanto ties and a lot more to do with the fact that he helped USDA to implement food safety systems for meat processing. So he was one of the few people who kind of knew how to start from the ground up in terms of building a food safety system. Now, at least at INTAC, we think it's a lot less about the personalities and about a particular boogeyman and a lot more about the fact that FDA got this mandate from Congress. They have to write these rules, and the way that they've chosen to written them is not in line with what sustainable and organic ag needs. And that's where our focus really needs to be, is less on the personalities and more on the fact that, well, we have these rules, and if we do not work to get them fixed very soon, we have a big problem on our hands.
Well, fair enough. Well, let's try Ken. Ken Kimes, why did the federal government hire Monsanto's Michael Taylor to superintend food safety?
I actually don't have any idea. Maybe he just had the right resume at the right time or the right connections. But, you know, it actually speaks to a larger piece in the culture, which is these rules and the whole approach of the FDA and the culture of the FDA. And that is that the culture itself is punitive. If we find a problem, we punish people, just like the Jensen brothers that were recently arrested for the cantaloupe. And they were brought up on charges that you actually can't dispute, and they don't have to show guilt or intent or anything like that. In other words, they introduced into the interstate food supply an adulterant. That's a fact. It's done. That, you know, the whole case is closed at that point. So I look at it as a punitive kind of a move on the part of the FDA, and these rules as being sort of a punishing kind of thing. And their whole approach is to be punitive about it. And they could come in, the government and the Congress could have come along and said, okay, we're going to help farmers produce so-called safer food. But instead, they're going to come in and say, we're going to punish farmers that are producing adulterated food, and we're going to look for adulteration. We're going to be on the farms looking for adulteration. And we can show up on those farms without any due cause or a warrant or any other thing because it's food and we have jurisdiction over it. So we can show up unannounced at any farm at any time, and we're going to punish the farmer if we find something wrong. And the poor farmer doesn't know what's wrong because they're not part of this food safety FDA culture.
Well, let me go back to Sarah then for just a moment and ask. Sarah, we've seen situations with respect to the federal government using its agencies to go after political opposition. I'm thinking most recently we see a case where the IRS went after the political opposition and in essence put them out of business. Do you think that the food and safety rules could be used to get rid of farmers for reasons other than food safety?
And that's a great question, Michael. And our team, we've been reading these rules. We've been pretty much living and breathing them since they were released in January, trying to take a real close read to figure that out, to say, well, you know, how did they write the rules and who will be harmed by them? And it seems to us it's a lot less about that sort of intent and a lot more about FDA simply not understanding Sustainable and Organic Ag, not understanding what kind of innovation is happening on farms and how to build rules that are flexible. We see a lot less evidence of that kind of negative or sort of punitive intent in the drafting of the rules, and a lot more of just lack of knowledge. And then the concern about that punitive piece comes back to more what Ken was saying about when someone actually gets onto a farm once the rules are final.
And there we are. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to ask our guests exactly how they think the government is going to go about making our food safe when on the farms we have things such as nature going on. And what are they going to do with nature? And how are they going to contend with nature, which has bugs in it, like most things do? So what does the government intend to do with our farms to make them safe? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for the program. Hey, we'd like to hear what you have to say too. Pick up your phones and join us, 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080 in the 831 area code. Food Chain Radio, how will the government make our farms safe? Do stay tuned. Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Big question on the table today. How will government make food safe? It's got a whole bunch of rules on the table, and we are being invited to tune in and log in and let them know what we think of their new rules. And so we're trying to come to grips with what we should say and what we should address. And the first thing we need to know is just how on earth they plan on making our farms safe for the food that we eat. And that's a big question. Let's ask Joanne Baumgartner from Wild Farmers Alliance. How do you make a farm safe, Joanne?
Yeah, well, by commenting on these rules, actually, which are the comments are due November 15th. So please do, listeners, make those comments.
What should they say?
Well, they should, for one thing, they should say that the FDA needs to encourage sustainable conservation practices on the farm. In the preamble of the rule, which is their thinking, it's not the rule itself, they say, we recognize that wildlife are on the farm and they're in and of themselves are not a problem. We encourage sustainable conservation practices, but because they haven't put that in the rule itself, it's really problematic. What's going to happen once the rule is in place? There's going to be a lot more buyers and food safety auditors out there with not knowing what to do, and they're going to mimic what happened in the Salinas Valley, where habitat was destroyed, wetlands were taken out, lakes were bulldozed. Big air sections of the Salinas River riparian habitat were ripped out, and FDA needs to protect these natural areas, not just because it supports wildlife, but it also helps farmers. I've talked to a couple of farmers who say, one huge farmer who says he's conserving his riparian areas. It keeps the wildlife where they need to be, as opposed to if you rip it out, the wildlife are going to end up in your produce. And wildlife have a low risk of carrying pathogens. It's the livestock and confined animal feeding operations that have the huge numbers of pathogens. So wild nature actually can help support farms There's coyotes that are eating rodents on farms. There's a new study showing how if biodiversity is decreased on a farm, rodents will actually carry more pathogens. So we need to encourage conservation. Conservation practices like grass waterways help to filter pathogens that otherwise could end up on the farm. And FDA is not encouraging that in the rule. We need to see that in there, and please make comments on that, listeners.
Joanna, your thinking and your fear that the Food and Drug Administration is trying to get rid of nature on farms, is that what I hear?
Well, I think they recognize that nature is there. They recognize that they're the country.
Well, that's nice of them.
That the country is diverse. There's places where nature surrounds farms much more so than in California, and they are not addressing it like they should, though. Without including text in the rule itself, we're going to see a lot of habitat destruction like we did in the Salinas Valley.
Okay, good. Well, let's try Joanne, or let's try Sarah. Sarah with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Sarah, how is government going to go about making our farms safe?
Well, Michael, there's a big distinction here between intent and reality, or how these things may play out. FDA's intent with these rules was to really reduce the risk of foodborne illness and contamination by setting forth new guidelines for farmers to follow in terms of how they grow fresh fruits and vegetables and how they pack and hold and process those into food for people to eat. That was the intent. The concern and the reason that we're all here today is that by the way that they've done that, they risk making sustainable agriculture collateral damage in the push, or in a misguided push, using the wrong kinds of rules to make in the attempt to make food safer.
And how would they go about, I mean, Joanne's thinking they're going to try to get rid of nature or do their best to do that. Is that what you see as well?
That's definitely one of the concerns, because they didn't, in the rules, they don't explicitly acknowledge or protect that conservation practices actually are a good thing on a farm. Likewise, there are some issues around, as I think Joanne may have mentioned earlier, there's some issues around using compost and manure. Organic, certified organic farms depend on those tools to improve their soil. And the way that FDA has written the rules around how you can use those products on your farm is going to make it almost impossible for an organic grower who might be subject to these rules to actually use manure in his or her fields, even though the National Organic Standards have been in place for a long time now. They allow it. They have good basic guidelines for how to do it, and they haven't had problems.
Sarah, I have to ask you, I did a food chain show some time ago with an attorney who makes his living by suing people who sell contaminated foods. And I asked him if he's ever had a case where local farms have been guilty of selling contaminated foods. He said, no. It's always these industrial scale operations that have the trouble. So are we not going to kill local food in the effort to try to make industrial food safe? Is that what's going on here?
That is. You put your finger on what is one of our biggest concerns with the rules, is just that. So when Congress passed this law, they included some really key pieces that were intended to reflect the fact that smaller scale growers who sell locally in communities, they pose a different level of risk. And they're also very, very deeply accountable to their community and to the people to whom they're selling. Unlike, if a lettuce mix is going, if lettuce from 50 different farms is getting mixed and sold in 50 different states, it's a lot harder to be accountable as it is if you're buying lettuce from your neighbor at the farmer's market. And so when Congress passed the rules, passed the system of the law, they included some key protections for those kinds of growers. And the task now is making sure FDA follows through with that so that, again, we don't crush local and sustainable ag in this effort to fix industrial.
Thank you. Let's go to Ken. Ken, when I go to the farmer's market and buy your microgreens, which used to be called sprouts but aren't anymore. I look in your eyes and say, hey, is this good stuff, Ken? And I can always see in your eyes that it's good stuff, and I always feel comfortable with it. How is this effort to drive nature out of agriculture going to impact organic farming?
Well, Michael, it is good stuff. And we have a food safety program that we have on our farm, and we're actually third-party food safety certified as by Primus Labs. So we take food safety pretty seriously on our farm. And so you can count on that to a point, because there's never zero risk for sure. And so what was your question again? Sorry.
My question is, I have to go to a break, and I'll ask it when we get back.
Okay.
The question is, what impact do you see these food safety rules having on your ability to be an organic small farmer and sell me food at the farmer's market? This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, food safety. Hey, what kind of food would be safe enough for you? Perhaps something that's been reformulated from genetically modified soybeans and put into a powder and put into a box that's really fancy. And I don't know. Is that what you're looking for out there? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Hey, folks, get yourself ready for an earful of some What's Eating What radio, and here it goes. The regulators always end up being regulated by?
The regulated.
Now, how the heck does that work, Ken Kimes, natives?
Well, it works to our advantage in some cases, which is to protect the commons.
Okay, let's go through this again. The regulators... Mm-hmm. Which, like, you know, that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about setting up a whole new government world of food safety police who mm-hmm. will be the regulators. Mm-hmm. They're going to be visiting farms armed with AK-15s and whatnot, and they're going to be looking for bugs, new natives. And they are the regulators. And they are being regulated by whom?
Well, when you have a regulation and it matures, let's say, which the FSMA hasn't matured yet, and it reduces the number of players in the field, then the players, through their economic impact, can come back to the lobbyists and control the regulating agency. But that's down the road for FSMA. And that's kind of the apocalyptic part of the small farming thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the impact on small farms has to do with resources. And we're talking time and money. If you're a large farm, you've got a staff that is dealing with food safety. And, you know, like an Earthbound Farms probably has 24 people on senior staff that deal with food safety. Now, if you're a small farmer, you are completely occupied with farming, probably 24/7. You're thinking about it. You're living it. You're doing it. Now, to add this on top, because mostly this is paper. We're mostly filling out paper and forms. We're doing trainings. We're trying to do everything that a large farm is doing around food safety on top of trying to get the produce to the market. And so it's going to be a resource issue for small farms, and it's going to wipe them out in terms of just trying to keep up.
Sarah, the big boys of industrial agriculture insist that what is fair for one should be fair for all. So if you're growing 10 million acres of rutabagas, the rules being put upon you should be exactly the same rules being put upon somebody with 1 acre of rutabagas. And so the person, as Ken suggests, the person that has 1 acre of rutabagas and is doing everything himself or herself, has to comply with the same rules and paperwork that the person with a million acres of rutabagas. Your comment?
That's a great point, Michael, and yeah, and I think Ken's comment on that was spot on, that for the little guy, it's a different kind of cost and a different set of resources that you have to do to bring to bear to comply with something like that. When FSMA passed through Congress, they did include different levels of regulatory, sort of different levels of the regs with the intent to ensure that smaller growers or that lower risk operators weren't subject to the full rules. So they did intend to do that, and again, the issue is, now that we've seen this first draft of the rules, there are some places where those protections are not as strong as they could be and should be. And the concern is that a smaller grower is going to say, I don't have thousands of dollars to spend on food safety. I'm going to stop growing this kind of produce, or I'm just going to close up shop entirely.
Well, a skeptic, and I'm, of course, not a skeptic at all, but a skeptic might ask, is this not a way for one segment of the industrial segment of our food production, or of our food chain, to get rid of its competition?
You could, you know, I think when you actually look, to be honest, I don't think that they see it. The market share of folks who are growing, of the small growers who are going to be impacted, is pretty small. I don't think it's not necessary. I don't see it that way. We see it truly as FDA doesn't know what's going on the farm, and we need for them to know so that they do not unintentionally make them collateral damage.
Okay, we're going to go quickly to the phones. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Program. Do you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I thank you for this show, Michael. The thing that I am reminded of and actually appalled that no one else remembers, we are doomed to repeat history. Lysenkoism is apparently live and well. And, of course, during the early or mid-1930s to 1940, government, Stalin, approved crazy farming practices, were centralized into the government, and consequently small farmers were ousted and great populations starved to death. And this sounds so much like what happened also in China with the same centralized political control over farming. Government does not understand what happens in the fields. And when they meddle in it, they destroy their populations. So that's all I have to say.
Sarah, you were the one, I guess, who suggested that the FDA doesn't know what's going on here. Did what Mary have to say ring true to you?
I think that's an interesting interesting historical context to bring to bear. And it does, again, highlight that if FDA doesn't know what a farmer is doing, then it's hard for them to figure out how to handle it. So a really good example is a lot of folks in California and across the country love to buy produce via a community-supported agriculture farm or a CSA farm. Congress told FDA, you know, CSAs, you know, there's some special protections for CSAs so that they don't get accidentally over-regulated in these rules.
Can you hold that for a second, Sarah? We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we will be right back to conclude. We'll ask our guests, what can we do to watch over our food? It's our food. What kind of food do we want to eat? Right back. So much to talk about and so little time to talk about it in. Sarah, you want to finish your point before we move on here?
I'll finish it real quick, Michael. I was just saying, the caller brought up a good point, which is that FDA, you know, the government doesn't know everything that's happening on farms. And for folks out there who are farmers or who are consumers, if you value purchasing from your CSA at your local farmer's market, if you want to see fresh, healthy local produce in local schools, be farm to school, FDA didn't treat those kinds of operations very well because they didn't understand how they work. And it's our chance now, before these rules are final law, to comment and make sure they do know they need to not be subject to the same level of regs that multi-million dollar giant industrial operations need.
Well, are you frightened as I am with this prospect?
It is deeply troubling. It's deeply troubling. And it has really galvanized me and the folks that I work with to do everything we can to weigh in with FDA and to make sure they understand how much support there is across the country for our farmers and for our opportunity to choose the kind of food that we want to eat and where it comes from, and the importance of weighing in and making that voice heard nationally.
How do we do that, Sarah?
All right. Well, for anybody out there, if you've ever signed an online petition or called your legislator, it's pretty similar. It's not that much more complicated. FDA has taken public comments through November 15th. You have to submit them either via snail mail or online. If you go to sustainableagriculture.net, there's a big old image right on the homepage about FSMA. You can click on that and get step-by-step instructions for how to submit your own comments to FDA before the deadline. It takes a few more minutes than signing a petition, but it's very helpful, and they want to hear from everyone.
And your website?
It's just sustainableagriculture.net.
Thank you. Joanne, what would you say to the FDA about your wild farms?
Well, I hope that our listeners also go to our website, wildfarmalliance.org, and can find all the things that we will say and hope that you listeners will say, and that is to protect conservation on the farm in the rural.
Do you think farms should have nature on them?
Yeah, farms provide us with lots of foods that pollinators pollinate, and without having healthy habitat, those pollinators are in decline worldwide.
What will happen to our food if we take nature out of it?
Well, I have a feeling that we are just going to get more and more sick.
Ken Kimes, gosh, what are you going to tell the FDA about their rules?
Well, it's kind of like, it's the law, right? So what I would like to say to the FDA is work with us. Let's work on education. Let's try and train people how to do this better in their light and maybe safer. But let's do education first and do the inspections and the punitive actions later.
Okay, folks, there it is. What kind of food do you want to eat? That is the choice that we have right now in front of us in the form of these rules being promulgated by the Food and Drug Administration. They want to make our food safe. But in doing so, what will they do to that food? What kind of food do you want to eat? There it is. Thanks so much to Joanne Baumgartner, Wild Farm Alliance, Sarah Hackney, National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, Ken Kimes, New Native Nursery, and you. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.